Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life Forces. I'm so glad you found us again. I'm your host, Bianca Giulioni, and I'm here to guide you through life in a way that actually feels good to you and in a way that your soul deeply craves. So I am here in the business of self-empowerment and no bullshit and fun and some other things. And this week on the podcast, we have Isabel Bogsik, who is amazing. She's Filipina American. She's a creative wellness guide, a term that's just so genius because she really links creativity and wellness. And she even considers one's creative calling, whatever it is, it can be cooking, it can be writing, it can be something entirely different, to be one's medicine. So I love how she conceives of creativity. She's totally brilliant. She has a very strong background, you know, as an art director, doing all these, you know, career with a capital C type things. And she's just taken all that experience, taken of all of her like organizing and other experiences, and created Unconventional Bliss, which is her company and the platform and the portal through which she helps people. And what I love about her approach is she encourages people, folks, to move through their creativity, to create from a place of rest, not from a place of rushing or scarcity or productivity, but from rest. And you can really feel that just in who she is. She's so embodied in what she does. So on this episode, we talk about so much. Creativity obviously is very central. We also talk about things like honoring your family lineage, especially as a child of immigrants, while still maybe choosing some different things in life. So honoring that lineage while still forging your own path, also connecting with your inner child, how Isabel stopped playing small, and yeah, how she works with people in her programs, which you'll find a lot of information of in this here episode. So I know you are going to absolutely love this. And yeah, as always, let me know what you think of the episode. Share it, email it, carrier pigeon it, telegraph it, whatever you want. I really appreciate you spreading the word and sharing your feedback. And especially if you rate the podcast on Apple or Spotify, it really helps the discoverability. You know, I really want to get some very cool guests here, so would super appreciate that. Anyway, let's get on to the episode. Let's get on to this amazing conversation with Isabel Bogsik, Unconventional Bliss. You're going to love it. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Life Forces Podcast. I have another guest with me here today. I'm so happy, so excited to connect with Isabel today. Isabel, how is it going?
I'm doing well. It's morning for me, so I'm very excited to jump into this conversation.
Yes, I love the morning freshness. Would you say you're generally a morning person?
No. I kind of had to make that shift because of work. And now I think just, you know, I think, unfortunately, people are right that when you wake up early and do things in the morning, you feel better. And damn it, it's true. So, I mean, I'm just going with the flow with it now.
I love that. Yeah, it really does feel so good because you get to noon and you're like, I have done things. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. on my last guest episode, which was my first ever guest episode, I asked Flavia what she was drinking, if she had any like beverage in the mix. Do you have a beverage with you right now?
I just have my water, but I did drink cocoa right before this.
Is that coconut water, just to clarify?
Oh, hot cocoa. So just cocoa powder.
Oh, like hot cocoa. Yeah. Oh, that's even more fabulous. Oh, I love that.
It's like my coffee.
That's great. Actually, I also had cacao this morning, and because I haven't been having as much caffeine, it felt like a caffeine rush situation to me.
Yeah, it's a little different. It's like like not as jittery. Like I can't do coffee at all. So cocoa just gives me like the sustained alertness or awakeness for the morning.
Yes, I love that. You are speaking my language. I am the same. I cannot do coffee. I wonder, you know, getting up so early this morning today for this podcast, was there anything in particular on your mind or on your heart? Like what's been going on in that space? I'm curious.
Oh, that's a big question for the day. let's see. My life existence, my life purpose in a light, but also like real way. but also, you know, just like really thinking about devotion to my creativity and holding space for the collective and how creativity can really be medicine for society if we claim that for ourselves and if we dive into that deeper and just reframing that narrative around the value around creativity. So yeah, those are some thoughts I've had.
I love that so much. Just casual.
Yeah, casually.
Tuesday morning thoughts, whatever day it is. Amazing. So that is a great little segue to talk about what you do. So would you like to describe that a little bit? We were talking before we started recording about how it can be hard to describe the types of things that we do as kind of like spiritual, creative, outside of the box kind of entrepreneurs, I guess. So I'd love if you could tell us a bit more about that and how you would describe it.
Yeah. Well, a little more context about me. I can share that. And then maybe that would be helpful to share about my values and the work that I do. So again, my name is Isabel Bugsick. My pronouns are she, her, and I am calling in from Tamian land, also known as the South Bay Area in California. And my background is in art direction, specifically in the design industry. And now I'm fully devoted to my role as a creativity wellness guide. And so really thinking about how to, you know, approach our creativity from a place of rest for sustainability, because burnout is such a common narrative that I've experienced, that many of my peers and creatives have been sharing. And so how do we reframe and approach that relationship to our creativity in a different way? So that's the framework that I'm moving from. And I've had the incredible opportunity to just hold space for so many creatives, change makers, caregivers, healers, who are BIPOC, women, LGBTQIA plus folks, and just really excited to be holding space for people in that realm. And so thinking about our roles that we create. I know we were talking about that before recording. I am really excited by the role of creativity wellness guide. I feel like I'm not like this guru or this full, 100% expert at everything. I am a guide here to share from my own lived experience, from my own learnings, from my own wisdom, and here to reflect back and create spaciousness for you to be able to learn about and connect with your own clarity, your own wisdom, because that is inherent within us. It's just clearing the blocks to rediscover that. So that is the work that I'm really excited by and thinking about, you know, talking about the things that we were mentioning about, you know, the casual conversation around creativity. So that's what I've been thinking about.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing all of that. I want to touch on what you mentioned, or one of the many things you just mentioned, which is burnout. So I am guessing that's something you experienced in your career as an art director. Do you want to expand on that a little more and how exactly experiencing that led you to think more about rest in the context of creativity and in the context of the value of you just as a person, but then also your creative work?
Yes. So there's like two things that I wanted to point out in terms of what burnout comes up for me. So one is as a person of color, as someone who is a child of immigrants, the narrative around burnout is so tied to my lineage and especially this idea of survival. that is the narrative that my parents and my ancestors have believed in, have that ingrained in their DNA, that, you know, that productivity is tied to value, that the more that we work, that is how we get money, or that is how we have value in society. How do we show up? How do we get promotions? All that stuff. So that's so tied to the narrative that I was brought up in the culture that I witness in. And how do I acknowledge that and learn from it and now release that narrative that is not for me to hold on to and create a new reality for myself in a way that acknowledges their sacrifices and their survival, where now I can do the self-actualization work and create a way of moving in this new timeline of experiencing pleasure and joy and rest, the ways that honor my ancestors instead of having this guilt of, you know, being able to experience that. So that's one thing that I think about regarding burnout. And then another is thinking about a recent experience that I had around almost like exactly a year ago from today. I actually had a minor surgery because I had a cyst on my ovary. Mm-hmm. And I feel like energetically there's something around the voice and creativity with the womb space, with the space around creating life. And I was playing small for several years. I was repressing my creativity. I was not pursuing things that were joyfully mine or things that were passionate and things that were exciting me. It was a lot of focus on the clients that I was focused on my work, and all these other things that I was putting first before my own voice, my own perspective. And it, in a way, probably, maybe there were other things, but, you know, I like to think of it manifesting energetically into a cyst, holding so tightly and needing to be excised, needing to be removed, and just having that 2-week period of recovery, of rest, of forced rest, to reflect on this appreciation of life, on slowness, on pausing, on this gratitude for the body that I'm in that is keeping me alive, that has movement, that I have breath in my body, and how thinking about mortality during the time leading up to that, what are the projects or the things that I might not have gotten to do if this was it? So it really shifted a lot of my priorities after, of what I would dedicate myself to after recovery. So those are the two main things that come to mind when I think about burnout.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. No, but I really appreciate you giving the context of your lineage, because I think it's so important to share that, you know what I mean? Just in general, but also because it really obviously forms who you are as a person, forms your beliefs. As you've expressed, some of those beliefs haven't been so helpful to you, and you've had to find ways to shift them and to release what's yours while still honoring, you know, where you come from and everything about that, you know, familial stuff, whether it's to do with the place that's not where you're living now, whatever it is. So that is so beautiful and sometimes not something that we talk about or want to dig into. But I really think all that is so, so important. So, and it's interesting because I find that I've experienced this too in different ways, you know, the forced rest, or like a health problem comes out of nowhere. And then it is kind of a mind fuck, for lack of a better word. You're just like, okay. And I really like that you're speaking about mortality, because I'm of the belief, and I obviously didn't make this up, this is in many different spiritual teachings and otherwise, that, you know, if you don't face your own death and your own mortality, you can't truly live life, right? And it sounds like that is what this experience that you're describing brought to you, is like, No. That stuff before, maybe we were getting close, but now I know what it takes and what it means to truly live my life. And I'm guessing in a purposeful way. So I'm wondering, like, what did that experience shift for you in terms of thinking about the meaning of life or your purpose in a wider scope?
Yeah. So I think, you know, a lot of things happen in divine timing, I like to think. And I was actually working with a mentor just months before finding out this health issue and going through surgery. I was actually guided to write my own eulogy and to write letters to the people I love, the things that I might not have been able to say, but wish I could say. And so even having that practice beforehand was really, really just heart opening. It was emotional, just really like articulating those words and thinking about the future in that way of what those things I wish I did or wish I said to the people I loved. And so that shifted then during surgery, recovery of how I approached my relationships and the care and the focus and the time that I put into them, more thoughtfulness, awareness around that, and not having regrets around what was not said or what was not done. Mm-hmm. And also in terms of the creativity work, the creativity side of things, why am I playing small? That was a question. Why am I repressing that when I've had evidence and proof before then, a few years ago, of pursuing my creativity in such an excited way? How did I lose that? Where did that come from? And how do I return to that? And what, thinking about the, you know, if I don't do it, what am I missing out on? And that's what comes to mind. I'm missing out on community. I'm missing out on peers and long-lasting friendships and creative peers. I'm missing out on incredible, deep conversations such as this one and meeting new people. So there's so much, and even like traveling too, that's another thing, just seeing the world and experiencing different cultures and expanding in that way. So much came to mind when I was reflecting on mortality, on the what might not have been, and all of that.
Yeah. Beautiful. When you were saying all that, I was, especially the part about playing small, I would love if you could expand on that. You know, what did that feel like to you when you finally realized it? And how did you kind of almost like practically go about the process of being your fuller self, right? Like expanding that probably like self-conception and I'm assuming, you know, probably having more faith in yourself, probably taking some more risks. Like, what did that practically look like for you?
Yeah. So playing small was like not having the confidence in sharing from my voice or sharing my perspective or not having this belief that I had something important to contribute when, let's say at work, you know, I was chosen or I was hired for that role for a reason. So why wouldn't I share my perspective? Or maybe in other things, maybe in personal situations or relationships or other places that you might engage in, it's thinking about how do we have that confidence that we do have something worth sharing, that there is value in ourselves merely because we have breath in our body, that we are valuable as we are. And so how do we remember that? And it is deep. It can be very deep work. It can be very heavy. So how do we also have gentleness and patience with ourselves through that process? And so I think when I was approaching that, I think three pillars that I think about is release, embody, and play. So how do I think about and be aware of the blocks that are stifling me, stifling my voice, and just being aware of that so that I know what I'm working with. Mm-hmm. And then once I figure out what releasing that looks like, whether that is working through limiting beliefs or clarifying that there is value within me, XYZ, what does that look like? Then I moved into this phase of embodiment. How can I remind my body that it is safe to express itself creatively in different ways? So creatively for myself, not just for work. Whether that's poetry, I was taking more poetry classes just for myself because that was something that I was denying, that I was pushing down, like, oh, I'm not a poet. I just write and journal for myself. But the more that I took classes or the more that I slowly shared, the more that I saw that it really resonated with the folks that listen. So it gave me that sign, like, hey, there's something there that I should, that it was evidence that it is safe and that it is encouraged to continue using my voice and be in that practice, in that momentum. And then the last thing is on play. How do I make it fun? How do I experiment, lead from a place of curiosity, remembering a beginner's mindset, my childlike self, that we didn't have this outside pressure or this idea of monetizing hobbies or other things, and just let ourselves play and see what arrives. So those are the three things that I really like to think about when I reflect on my own place of releasing those blocks.
I love that. I want to ask, in terms of limiting beliefs, was there a central one that kind of kept creeping up on you? Or did you feel like there was 50? I don't know. I found in my own inner work, it has often come down to like one or two. Do you know what I mean? That might show up in different ways, might kind of be spoken in different languages, let's say, but it's the same kind of fundamental limiting belief. I wonder if you relate to that or you had a different experience. I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, I definitely have had various ones over the years. And I think the one that was really coming to the forefront in the past couple of years was my belief around my creative capabilities, specifically around design, not thinking that I was good enough, this feeling of comparison, especially studying design in school as well, and repressing my multidisciplinary skill set. And thinking that I had to be super focused on one area when really my gifts are in having the interest in multiple things, where my Gemini sun comes in, of being thirsty for knowledge of so many different things and wanting to dive deep in all of it. So how do I lean into that? And so that was something that I really grappled with, of owning my unique creative perspective and lens of the world in this excitement for so many various topics.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you can see that in your work and also in your journey, because I know, for example, you started would you call it a publication, Brown Papaya? I think it's more than that. I don't know how you describe it. Tell me more about that period.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I look on that period fondly when I think about its conception. And yes, it started as a magazine, and from community interest and just going with the flow, you know, as a generator in my human design, just responding to my environment that people were interested in more spaces. So in a way, it became like a collective. There was a retreat that came out of it and workshops at different universities and other events. So it really started. So Brown Papaya, I named it that way as a reclaiming of brown skin, talking about colorism within the Philippine culture, and papaya because there is this thing called papaya soap, which is known for lightening, or rather bleaching the skin to lighten it. And so there's just this popular product called papaya soap that is strongly associated with that. And so merging those two words as contrast, as a challenge on the topic of colorism, and creating a space for Filipinx folks to come together to dive into these conversations around identity, culture, being a woman or femme, and what that experience and those intersections of identities look like to them, and finding a sense of community when these stories are shared in circle, finding support in that way as well, that it is mirrored back, that we are not alone. And so that was a moment of seeing how conversations, especially creating safe spaces and courageous spaces to speak on these things that we might not otherwise have the space to talk about. So that's something that I really love doing, creating spaces for deeper conversation on whatever topic that might be and diving deep into it with the fun of having those photo shoots for the magazine and interviewing folks and learning more about their relationship to this topic on colorism. And again, it just expanded into more experiences, and it really led me and opened me up to local community and creatives, and showing me my own creative capacity and what more I can do. And so that is one of the things that I look on as reminder, as proof that I have done something great for a community and for my own creative spirit. So how much more could I do if I continue to devote myself to my creative practices?
Yeah, amazing. Totally. And yeah, there's really something to be said about the creative act of creating and fostering a community. And I think, like, when we think about creativity, we think of a painter, graphic design, a filmmaker, you know, like those forms of creativity. And I'm sure, you know, out of anyone, you would know that creativity comes in so many forms, but not everyone is able to not only create, but foster a community. Because it's really easy to be like, I'm creating this community around this topic or this identity or set of identities. It's another thing to be like, I am creating this container for all of you and we're going to go deep with it. Not everyone is willing to do that. Was that something that started for you around the time of Brown Papaya, or was it something that you kind of found yourself in earlier in life? I would love to know about that.
Yeah, I love this question. I think, again, I feel like there's two aspects that come to mind around this. One is that I was involved in school organizations. In high school, I was a student leader and eventually became president for my last 2 years in high school for a community service club. And then in college, I became very involved with the Filipinx American community and again became co-president my senior year and was involved during my time there. And so creating spaces and holding events and thinking about how we care for our community has been a practice that I've been doing in school, and it just carried on through my time after college and today. And another aspect that I also look on to is my culture, my cultural identity. I feel like in the Philippines, community is such a strong part of our upbringing, of how we take care of families, thinking about multi-generational homes, that is normal to have a village literally caring for the children and caring for our elders, that we can easily go to our neighbors or even the people within our homes to care for each other when we need to take care of other errands. There is this redistribution of errands and chores and wealth within the home, within the village. And so that is another aspect that I really respect and admire and take inspiration from, thinking about the strength of community and how we can foster that in a society that is highly hyper-independent. How do we return to and remember the power of community?
Yes, that is so important, because I think a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, speaking to the US, to Canada, to like some parts of Western Europe, I don't know, just the places that I'm more familiar with, I think, unfortunately, a lot of people think like, oh, there's no other way except like this way of doing things, especially with things like COVID and all of that, right? Making people possibly feel more isolated. So I think it's like great to remember that there's plenty of cultures still to this day. Like I can relate a little bit with my like Italian family and my Italian roots. Like it is very similarly, as far as I know, you know, culturally, like we take care of our people, like grandma's here, whatever, you need help, we're going to help you with your groceries. We got it, you know? And I think it's so important to remember, even if you don't have that relationship with your natal family, however you want to call it, you can find that with other kinds of communities, right? I think that's important too. And I'm sure that's something in one way or another that you foster in your own community that you've created. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think that a lot of my own lived experience is something that I integrate into the spaces that I hold. How do I think about the power of community? How do I think about the looking back on our lineage and having that appreciation and awareness of where we come from, how that informs how we move today, and also thinking about a sense of safety? That's something that I've had such affirmation and joy in hearing from a lot of the people that have been in spaces with me, that they feel the sense of safety when we share space together. That's so important as someone who is an introvert and grew up super anxious in social settings. So I'm so glad that I hear that from a lot of the folks that I share space with. Because safety, how do we feel safe so that we can be open in opening up and sharing ourselves, having that courage to share ourselves and dive deeper with ourselves? So having that sense of safety again is something that is like a starting point for what I create. And in the spaces that I hold, again, my interest is in that intersection of creativity and wellness. How do we foster that creativity from a place of rest so that we can pursue our passions, our hobbies, our desires and dreams consistently for a long time so that we can honor our creative gifts, but feel rested and integrate that as a practice, not as an afterthought. And so I am holding spaces in group programs, in one-on-ones, and the three pillars that I've practiced myself, release, embody, and play, are things that I also integrate and invite my participants to practice as well in the spaces that I hold. So those are the things that I really am excited in holding space for. And it's not just creatives. Again, creativity is in all industries, whether you're in tech, you're an entrepreneur, you are in nonprofit, you are a parent, whatever background or identity you hold, creativity is needed in solving problems, in cooking meals, in figuring out how to communicate to folks nonviolently. There are so many ways to integrate creativity in our lives. So that's, again, another thing that I want to remind folks, that I welcome everyone who has a desire for creativity in whatever form and shape that looks like. Especially for those who might be excited and intrigued by this conversation, then I really think following that intuition of learning more will guide you to deepen your creative practices together.
Yes. And you have so many great resources, even just on your Instagram and on your beautifully designed website. Oh my gosh. I was like looking through there. I'm like, oh, it's so beautiful. I feel so cozy. I feel inspired. I love your website. Just saying.
Thank you.
And yeah, I love that we're talking about creativity coming in all forms. I think we kind of touched on this earlier in this exciting conversation that I'm losing track of in a good way, because it's so, so true. I think just the act of existing is like an ongoing kind of creative act, you know,
yes.
Whatever it might be. And that's so beautiful. And I think to just not put pressure on ourselves to focus on like let's say creativity with a capital C, you know, the more like stereotypical forms of creative expression I was kind of mentioning, but just like living as a creative act, being as a creative act, choosing certain things as a creative act, I think is so amazing. And you mentioned rest, which I would definitely love to get more into. One thing that's been coming up a lot for me is rest, but then also more specifically regulating my own nervous system and feeling safe in that way. Because I think it's one thing to be like, oh, of course I'm safe. Like I have somewhere to live and I have this and I have that. Cool. But if your body doesn't feel safe, because you could, in theory, whatever, be very financially well off, da da da, you have all your needs met and more, but still feel unsafe within, you know, your sacred home of your body. So I would love to get your perspective on that and how it relates to how you move through the world, and then also within the containers that you create and cultivate for others.
Yes, thank you for bringing this up. I think, yes, how do we take care of our nervous system, feel and create a sense of safety for ourselves, no matter where we are physically, no matter where we are emotionally, what does that look like? And I think one thing that I can bring up is how thinking about what are rest practices that are supportive for you right now? What are those activities? So taking a moment to reflect on that. Is it taking some time to listen to new music or comforting music or music that makes you feel good? And maybe a step further is listening to music that matches your emotion or energy in that moment. Can you move your body and move it in a way that matches your emotions, that matches the song, and literally moving the energy around through your body and out of your body, maybe feeling having any stagnant energy and moving it around or releasing it. So that's something that I like to think about, that rest isn't just stagnant. It isn't static. It isn't just meditation, even though that is amazing and great. But rest can also be active. It can also be movement. Maybe you're walking outside or yoga or dance or even singing. What are those achievable small activities that you currently do? And then how can we maybe expand on that? What else can you do? Thinking about what feels good. So that's like another level to think about. What is pleasurable to you? And how can we extend that or expand on that and slow it down to really bring awareness in the pleasure? And then when we might be short on time, inviting in this idea that it is possible to still practice rest in between all Zoom meetings that we might have, or taking care of children, or all the responsibilities that we have, even if it's just like 5 minutes or even 2 minutes in between things, how do we deepen the quality of the rest if we don't have the quantity? Maybe it's deepening the inhales and exhales that we have, closing our eyes for a few seconds and having this pause of body awareness in ourselves. So I really like to invite folks into this conversation around rest, of what is achievable, and move away from the overwhelm that might come across when we talk about rest, or this idea that it is impossible or far off, and reflect on what we're already doing and how can we play around with that and extend or expand on it or reframe it or shift it. So that's what I like to do around thinking about rest and pleasure and pausing and integrating that into our creativity.
I really love all of that. And I love, you know, keeping it realistic, because I think sometimes, especially for those of us who might be harder on ourselves or maybe grew up in an environment where things were more strict, I don't know, just throwing that out there, you know, to approach things in a more gentle way and not in like a black and white, black or white, all or nothing kind of way. I think that's so important. It's just like, what are you already doing and how can you expand on that? As you said, one thing I did, I usually take like a little walk in the morning, even if it's like 10 minutes. And one thing I did today is just in the middle of my walk, kind of randomly, I just like stopped and I just like breathed a couple like deep breaths. And I just like look down this like little street that I never really noticed. And it was just like 2 seconds. And, you know, it still has an impression on me, right? It's so beautiful. It doesn't have to be like, oh, all of a sudden we're doing like transcendental meditation 2 times a day for 20 minutes each, you know, which is great, but not always someone's first step or, you know, reconnection to this kind of idea of rest. So yeah, I really share that kind of vibe or perspective on rest. And I really love that that's the way you approach it. One thing about your work, and I think about the way that you kind of think about creativity, is you've said that, you know, one's creative calling is their medicine. Do you want to expand on that a little bit? I'd love to hear about that.
Yes. So I really do believe that creativity is medicine for the collective, for the community, for the world. If we take a moment to think about a song that might have impacted us or carried us through a certain emotion, a heartbreak, a grief, a loss, or a happy moment, or a movie that made an impact on us, made us cry, made us laugh, made us scared, or a piece of art that we experienced, or a play, or a dance that was amazing and beautiful, really just any kind of creativity, spoken word, poetry, other types of experiential types of art, art really elicits emotion. How powerful is that? To take something that was a mere thought within a mind and alchemize it and bringing it outside of the body into something physical, tangible, or experiential for another being or a whole group of people, even globally, to experience and have a shift in emotion or mindset or perspective is so powerful to think about in that way. And so thinking about how we all have that ability to be able to create something and make some kind of impact or share a perspective or share an emotion and experiencing that, inviting other people in into that. And so how amazing would that be if we all claimed our creativity confidently and bravely and so passionately and lovingly and invite others into that process, into that experience, into that final product. So there's so many changes that could be made in this world, in this society. What could that look like? And we can really dream that up and create a new one as creators, as innovators, as visionaries. What could that look like? And it all starts from an idea.
Yeah, beautiful. And I love how you just reminded us all, like me and everyone who's going to listen to this, how we take creativity and beautiful art that people create or whatever else it is totally for granted, because how often are we actually thinking of it in the way that you describe, right? You know, it's just like, we just open Spotify, like put on this playlist, like, okay, new podcast episode from this podcast I love. Okay. Like stream this movie. You know, we're so lucky to have such great access to all this amazing stuff and inspiring stuff. But yeah, how often do we think about it that way, the way you're describing, because it's not, you're not describing it in a particularly, like, I don't know, esoteric way. It is what you're describing, right? It is such a beautiful thing, and it is, you know, getting to experience people's emotions or like the innermost parts of themselves that they've decided to like put out into the world, which isn't always easy. I really love how you reminded us all of that. It's amazing. It's so amazing.
Yeah, I think it is something that we tend to take for granted and forget. Like, unfortunately, the arts is one of the first things that get cut in schools. But we forget that so many of the things that bring us joy, entertainment, amusement, comfort, comes from creatives, like costume designers from the movies that you like to watch, or animators from the shows that you like to put on for your children or for yourselves. The clothes that we're wearing, people are studying fashion design for that, or even the tailors and the people actually putting it together, and so much more, really. If we look at anything in our rooms, the things that we're wearing, what we're holding, our technology, they're creative folks and innovators putting that together. So how do we have that appreciation for that process?
Completely, because I always think about it in the context of, you know, my favorite movies or my favorite music or whatever it is. Someone had to have the not only have those ideas, but make them happen. And in the process of making them happen, you know, I know, so much stuff comes up, right? Like so much like gunk, so much like, I can't do this. I'm not good enough. I don't know how this program works. I don't know how to make it like this. Blah, blah, blah. So I'm curious, what is your approach to those kind of blocks or periods of tension in the creative process? Like what do you say to people, or how do you navigate it yourself?
Yeah. That is definitely a conversation that comes up in a lot of the work that I do, and also in my own personal work. I am also moving through blocks constantly. How do I release that? How do I be aware of that? And so I think part of it is my rest practices to have that clarity, to have the awareness of what it is. So for example, for me, I do morning pages. For those who know The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron, which is a book that invites you into these creative prompts and practices for 12 weeks. Morning pages is one aspect of that, of writing 3 pages every day in the morning and letting any thoughts that might be festering just release onto there. No prompt, no anything. It's just letting you have that space to release. And so that really helps set the tone for the day of, you know, maybe dream recall or thinking about the previous day or any worries or limiting beliefs or any thoughts that I might have. It gets to be removed from my body, and then I get to actually visually see it. Because there were times where I kind of was creatively constipated in a way of not writing. Writing is such a big practice for me. In processing life and everything. So when I do write it out, I can actually see and reflect back to me what that thing might be that might be blocking me, or maybe a repeated fear or repeated thought, and see like, oh shit. Okay. So that's the thing that I keep telling myself I will do, or I won't do, or I have hesitancy around. So that's just one practice that I invite folks into my experiences to practice, of journaling or morning pages, to do this inner work that we can do independently that is fairly accessible. All you need is a writing utensil and piece of paper, and having that dedicated time to write. And again, like, I know it's a challenge if no one has done this before. So if you need to do it at the end of the day, I've done that. Or, you know, separating the pages. So it's like one page in the morning, then page in the afternoon, and then page at night. Whatever works, as long as we like get into that momentum of reflecting and writing those thoughts out, that helps to over time create some kind of like observation of our own selves. So that's one way of viewing and being aware of blocks. And then in terms of moving through them, a lot of it takes a lot of work. So I look to, aside from the independent work, how do I, again, seek community and support? So maybe it's sharing with my support system, with a best friend, with someone you trust and care about. I think that's an important part. Not just sharing it with someone, but sharing it with someone who you trust to hold that truth, to hold that space with you, and being able to have someone receive you and witness you, even if you are blocked, and they may be able to mirror something back that you might not be clear in seeing, and share your gifts and share what they value in seeing you. And sometimes it's just asking for affirmations from your loved ones to remind you of the love that you have and the embodied love that you are. So yeah, internal reflection, seeking community, being able to move through those blocks and being aware of the blocks are things that I like to think about, that I like to practice and invite folks into doing as well.
Yes, I love that. I am a big fan of morning pages. I am a bit more sporadic with them, but that works for me. But I did notice, anytime I do them, I do notice the difference of just like whatever I'm writing, it doesn't even matter. It's just like, I feel like something's been cleared out of the way. You know what I mean? And whatever it is I'm doing that day, even if I'm not doing anything particularly creative, I just feel like I can come to everything with a bit more clarity and more space. So I love that you encourage folks to do that because it makes a ton of sense. And what you were saying after that, which has slipped my mind, but it was beautiful. Yes, sharing about community, sharing with your community. So sorry, I just had a little blank there. That is another great approach because I think also, at least in my experience, I actually studied art history in university. And, you know, with that, especially with some of these like 20th century male artists, it's like, you know, they're all like on their own or whatever. Some of them might be in community, but you know, there's this like romantic or whatever kind of idea of artists like suffering on their own. And they had the only way they can make great art is like to be depressed and never talk to anyone. You know, I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. So I love that you are saying to go to your community, but to be a bit selective and not to just go to anyone. I feel that because also with certain things that we're creating, they're so sacred, you know, especially mm-hmm. when it's maybe a bigger project or something that you've never done before that you hope to like put out in the world in a bigger way. Maybe I totally agree that, you know, that's not something that you necessarily tell everyone about, you know, like there's something that I'm working on that not so many people know about, but it's great to go to those people who know and just be like, I just need you to say you can do it. Or like, this is happening today. Like, let's talk about it. I totally, totally agree with that.
Yeah. Even with sharing creative projects, and I live with my family, and I sometimes have to remind my dad, like, hey, I'm going to show you this creative project. I do not need any critique or feedback or advice. As a parent, I just want you to say good job. And so sometimes, like, I even have to let my parents know, like, hey, this is the support that I'm seeking. So even like explicitly saying and requesting the support you're seeking can be helpful in guiding your loved ones on how to approach that conversation. Because sometimes we might be sharing support or advice in the way that we think we want, but maybe that person needs support in another specific way. So again, that could be another thing to reflect on, experiment with, of being explicit with the support you seek.
Yes. Great thing to bring up. Totally. Because sometimes you're like, at least with me, now that I'm more aware of that, you know, I'll just ask my friends, like, is it okay if I vent to you about this? Like, I don't need advice. I just need some space to like, talk about it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's so important because then also the other person or the other people that are involved can like be honest with you and be like, yes, I'm like, this is a good time for this, or it's not a good time for this, or go for it, or call me later today, you know, whatever it is. I think that's a great way to go about it, to just like be considerate of your own stuff, but also of the other person or people involved. I think that's totally important. I would love, you touched on, you know, parents. So I would love to kind of segue now to talking about inner child work and how you've incorporated that in your journey and the way you work with people today. And yeah, how that affects your creativity.
Yes. So I'm excited to dive into this. I actually held a workshop just last week around inner child work. And that is actually one of the components of my group program, Unearthing Creative Wisdom. And inner child work is so potent. And it can also be so simple to get into and practice. And I've invited folks into this practice quite a few times already. And the experiences that people get from it just after a couple minutes of doing it is so profound and so deep. It's so heartwarming and so amazing to be a witness to those reflections. So the things around inner child work that I like to dive into is, how do we remember and connect with our younger selves of having that liberated relationship to creativity? There was no pressure. There was no ideas around perfectionism. We just created for the sake of creating. For me, I really love jumping around different crafts and different projects. Sometimes things were half finished. There was no one that I needed to send this to. There was no client. There was just creating for fun and creating as the activity, not thinking about the end product. And so how do we remember that? How do we play? How do we let ourselves be messy, splatter things around, and be led by curiosity, be an experimenter, in a way a scientist, just like try things out and not think about the other things that might be holding us back. And so the things that I invite folks into is using our non-dominant hand in the practices that I invite folks to do with me. So one of those is drawing with your non-dominant hand. So for example, I write every day with my right hand. So I would do the practice with my left hand. And by doing so, when we draw and we see the finished product, it looks like something that a young child might have done, because it's maybe clumsy, it may not look perfect, maybe squiggly. And with that, in that practice, a lot of the things that folks bring up after doing it is kind of, some people experience this hesitancy or this tension or fear around perfectionism, like, oh my gosh, I have to do this thing, this practice, but I'm using my other hand. I'm not practicing it. I'm not an expert. I didn't practice beforehand. I don't know what this will look like. So all these narratives come up for them just in that short, like maybe 2 minute practice. And after, they realize like, oh, I didn't have to make it a certain way. I just had to focus on creating in that couple minutes. So it's very interesting, just like in such a short practice, these things coming up from our subconscious. And another practice I like to invite folks into is, again, using our non-dominant hand to respond to a question, to write and respond as if we are our inner child. And again, once we look at that end product, it looks like our younger selves are writing that note to us, because it's in a maybe big handwriting, or it's a little messy outside the lines. And by using our non-dominant hand, we connect with the non-linear parts of our brains. We connect with something beyond rational thinking, and we get to access something that we might not be aware of. Our subconscious is coming to the surface. So it can be quite profound and quite eye-opening of the reflections that come up. And it's such a distilled truth that comes up of what our inner child is just asking of us, of connecting with our creativity. So I really, really love inviting folks into this practice, because one, it's really accessible and really simple technically to do. And the other, despite that, it's so profound in terms of the reflections that come up afterwards.
Yes, totally. You were speaking to me with some of that perfectionism stuff, let me tell you. Let me tell you. And it's so interesting, because it's not always from family or from society. I'm speaking for me, at least. Like, I was really hard on myself as a kid for no reason, in terms of like, my parents never really pressured me. You know what I mean? It was strange. Mm-hmm. We can unpack that another time. That's not so important. But just to say, I really resonate with the perfectionism stuff. And I love those practices as like a way of being like, just do it. Doesn't matter. Use the other hand. Like, go for it. See what happens. I'm curious, what has younger Isabel revealed to you? I'm sure there's many things, but what's something that like stands out?
Ooh, Okay. I really think about when I look back to my younger self. And there are so many things that I can reflect on depending on the age, because our inner child is so different from our inner teen. And let me tell you, that's an angsty teen phase. You know, they have different needs too. But thinking about my younger self, my childlike self, just giving this grace and this patience, but also gratitude for doing what she knew at the time to keep me safe to arrive today in this present self, in this present day. And also to give this assurance that following her intuition will guide her to the experiences that will lead to expansion and excitement and pleasure and joy and friendship that she was seeking back then. And lastly, about having the courage to use her voice, because it was scary for her as someone who is an introvert, as someone who was super anxious in school and social settings, and having the fear around even saying hello to a classmate, just having the encouragement that the more she practiced using her voice and owning it, the more that she will have that confidence in using her voice and speaking to large groups of people now with a groundedness and rootedness and calmness that she would have never thought. And so just having that patience and grace for my younger self, that she will be okay and that she will transform and change with this devotion to her creativity.
Totally. She must be so proud of you and think you're the coolest. I think so. I would say, you know, considering what I know of the journey, what you've shared here, that's so sweet. I love that.
Yeah, thank you.
I would love to talk a little bit about books, because I know, like, I've seen that you've shared about books, which I love. I'm a huge reader too. You more recently shared about Robin Wall Kimmerer's 3 words, braiding sweetgrass, hello language, which I've also read. I loved, love, love, love. What other books, or maybe even that book, what books have had a big impact on you lately?
Oh my gosh, I need to pull up my book list, because, you know, what topic, what genre, like, we can get into it. Like, I also love sharing it, so, and also open to book recommendations too, so I think we need to share our book list.
Definitely.
So one that I'm currently reading, I haven't finished yet, but so far, I'm halfway through, but really love it so far. It's called Slow Pleasure by Euphemia Russell. And I really love it because of, again, just tied back to our conversation of rest and finding joy in our lives. And pleasure isn't relegated to just sex and sensuality, but how do we invite pleasure into our mundane everyday moments of having this awareness in our body, having pleasure in the food that we eat, in the moments of walking outside in our neighborhood, and actually give some reflection questions and practices as well in it. So I love that. Another book that comes to mind, well, there's The Artist's Way. So that one's also like an active prompt type of experience. And let's see, I think, also on pleasure, Pleasure Activism by Adrienne Marie Brown. Another incredible book around the different areas of pleasure that can be invited into our world or into our thoughts, and how pleasure can look so different in so different realms, but also so important, all those realms, such as thinking about pleasure and joy and romantic thinking with our platonic friendships. How can we view those friendships in a romantic and loving way that is often not encouraged, that we think about romance just for a romantic partner or a spouse or something like that, that we can only devote romantic feelings and activities to them. But why can't we invite romantic or pleasure activities around all of our relationships and even to ourselves too. So I love Adrienne Marie Brown's work, their podcasts and everything really. So I think I'll share those for now, but I'm always reading. I have quite a stack of books from the library right now too. So yeah, also just want to hype up the library. You know, you can access free books through there, either physical or the ebook. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Speaking my language with the library thing. I have a library card from my hometown. I don't go there so often, but they have the ebook option. So I'm downloading stuff. I'm, you know, renting books or whatever you call it, borrowing books like digitally. It's so great. It's the best. I love that you shared that. And I even saw that you shared that on your Instagram. I was looking at some of your previous posts. Another book related thing I noticed that you shared was this app called The Story Graph. Do I have that right?
Yeah. Yes. Do you use it?
I cannot wait to get on that and put all my reads on there. Oh my gosh. It seems so cool. It seems so cool. I'm so glad you shared that. I can't wait to get into that.
Yeah, I love it. I've been on and off Goodreads for years, but never got into it. But for some reason, something about StoryGraph is just, it makes me want to use it. Like it has documents like the books that you're reading and translate it into different statistics of like the genres that you're reading or, you know, how many pages that you're reading a month. You can set a goal for yourself and see related books. Like it's just also just easy, very easy to use too.
I love that. Love that so much. I can't wait to check it out. I want to ask you a few fun, more, not that these questions haven't been fun, but just like fun questions, I call them, whatever, before we kind of wrap up here. I don't know if you're a TV person, you're obviously a reader, but if you are a TV person, what's been your favorite TV show this year?
Ooh, this year? Gosh, there's so much. So I'll talk about one that I just finished. So I just finished What We Do in the Shadows. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it is a fun, lighthearted vampire comedy mockumentary. And it's based on a movie of the same title that was co-written and co-starred Taika Waititi. And so he makes cameos in the show, but it's just such a silly, lighthearted show. And it's perfect for October, for spooky season. but there are moments that get a little, you know, emotional or deep. And I love that balance. And also just like doing some consuming something that's not related to self-development or anything, just like letting my mind rest and be entertained and amused, I think is also very important.
Totally, totally agree with you. Yeah, love that. I haven't watched that one, but I've heard good things. So maybe it's this month it's happening.
Yeah.
What is music that puts you in a good mood?
Okay. That also depends on my mood. But before this call, you know, just to hype me up, move my body, I was playing Princess Nokia. So I love Princess Nokia's work. Incredible. I had the opportunity to see her live a couple years ago. Just amazing. She was like throwing water at the audience. I got blessed with that water.
Princess Nokia, yes.
So specifically I was playing Diva. I don't know if you know that song, but
I can't remember off the top of my head, but she's great. She's great.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Nice. What is your favorite way to unwind?
Favorite way to unwind. I would have to say, I think after being in my room and doing a lot of work on the computer, going outside of my room and socializing with my family, seeing what they've been doing that day and having that space to socialize and be away from my screen, I think is great. And going outside and take a walk, I think is important to have that delineation between work mode and then house mode and coming back to the home refreshed in a way of like having that spaciousness to clear the mind and look outside, rest your eyes, rest your brain, and get some fresh air.
Yes, totally. Love both of those. What is your number one thing that you do for your overall wellness, whether it's a practice, whether it's a supplement you love, food, whatever it is?
I think in the morning, my daily morning routine. So it's my morning pages and my meditation. So lately I've been using Insight Timer, and that's been helpful to just, you know, have that resource of choosing something that feels interesting to try out and be guided by. So I love how accessible these are. Like if you have a computer or a smartphone that you can just download that app, and then morning pages, you just need a piece of paper and a pen. So I think that's really important for me of setting my day, setting the tone, clearing my energy so that I feel ready to do my work from a rested place.
Yes, I love that. And just to highlight, Insight Timer is an amazing free app. I've been using it for the longest time. There is a paid option, but the free option is incredible. Like you have so many different things to choose from. So just plug in that, non-sponsored, but it's a great resource.
They need a sponsor us. Like we love
no,
it.
No, honestly, no, I've seen how you talk about Insight Timer, like just with a cursory scroll of your feed. I'm like, you could be an ambassador.
Oh
anyway.
My gosh. Yeah.
We'll talk about that later. My last question before we wrap up, because you're such a book lover. Okay. If you could only read one book for the rest of your life, what book would it be?
Oh my gosh. Why did you have to do that? Why?
I don't know.
Oh, that is tough. Because there's way too many genres. I'm like, okay, what can I not get tired of? Let's see. So I think I would have to choose some kind of poetry book, just because I feel like when I return to some poetry books, that a poem can feel so different depending on the time of life that I'm in or what I'm experiencing in that moment. So yeah, I think some poets that I really like lately are Ariana Brown, Renee Biddy, Jessica Salgado, Barbara Jane Reyes. Those are some poets that are top of mind right now, are on my shelf. And again, like poetry, I can't go wrong with that. Can never get tired.
Beautiful. Amazing. So, tell us where we can find you. Tell us what you've got planned for the rest of 2023 and beyond. How can we all connect with you?
Yes. So I would love to connect with everyone listening. I'm excited to learn more about your creativity. My DMs are open. My email is open. On all the things, I am Unconventional Bliss. And really just like the first thing that I invite you all to do is book a free clarity call with me. That is available right when you go into my website. And it's just 20 minutes. And we can learn more through a casual conversation about how I can best support you and your creative desires and your goals and your dreams, how we can bring that to life, whether it's a group program or my one-on-ones. Whether, you know, whatever feels good to you, you'll still walk away with either clarity or suggestions or recommendations or action steps to move forward. So I'm super excited to connect with folks who feel like this conversation lit something up or intrigued them or opened up something for them. I would love to connect with all of you and learn more.
Beautiful. And I love the name Unconventional Bliss. Can you just tell us like how that came to you?
Yeah. So it's interesting. This name I've had for years, like right when I was starting college. And that name and platform started off as like a fashion blog or a lifestyle blog. It was something that I was interested in playing around with. Another thing that I was just expressing myself creatively for fun. And I was just thinking about how I didn't really feel like I fit into mainstream things. And so unconventional came up. And then bliss, that part, I was thinking about, and again, like a through line, a connecting thread of what brings me joy. And there are so many things that bring me joy. It's not just one thing, you know, the unconventional things. So many different things that come together that bring me joy and pleasure. So that is the essence that came to be with that name. And I still feel aligned with that name and the work that I do, that, you know, all the things that bring us joy and bliss and pleasure, what does that look like? And it doesn't have to look like what is socially pushed upon us, of what is the norm. How can we break out of that, that is authentic and true to us?
Beautiful. Love it. Great, great place to end off, if I do say so myself. Isabel, thank you so much for this conversation, for sharing so deeply and amazingly. And it was just great getting to know you better. And I'm excited that we're going to connect more and all that great stuff. Thank you again. And yeah, have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. It was amazing chatting with you.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Life Forces podcast. If you loved what was shared, got inspired, or took something valuable from it, I would love if you could give me a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or even share this episode with a friend. I deeply appreciate it, and it really helps the podcast grow. Also, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a thing. To stay connected, you can follow me on TikTok and Instagram at Life Forces Inc. and visit lifeforcesinc.com for more information about how to work with me. Until next time, stay you.